Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, August 10th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. They're available free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, also an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that process has improved the quality of their life and relationships. And in the situation where you either can't join us live on the internet show and call in and have us support you in doing a worksheet, or you don't want to do that, repeated listening to those audio files is a wonderful way to use them as a tutorial to increase the benefits you can get when engaging these tools. And we encourage people to do that soon and often, primarily because our experience has been when people engage these tools, their lives get better by leaps and bounds. And secondarily, because the more people get access to these tools, try them, have success, have difficulties, the more it stimulates comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. That's W-H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org. And you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Mindshifters-academy.org. If we get your comments, your questions, your answers, or testimonials, and we address them on the internet show, as time allows, we will then send you an email to let you know what day and time we addressed it, and you can go into the archives and access the comments, the feedback, the discussion, etc. The archives are a powerful tool that's also available. We've been doing this internet show for, well, since before they had the word podcast, so we were doing internet show back 11 plus years ago. And the archives of those, almost every show we've done, there are a couple of got lost in technical difficulties, but almost every show we've done is now available in the archive at whyagain.org. Instead of clicking on the Start Here link, you can click on the link of the microphone, picture of the microphone, and it will let you search through the last 11 plus years of the show to access that as a powerful tool of, I use it on a regular basis. I know some people that use it and they'll just scroll through and click on a date randomly just to see what happens. Others, not all of them, but quite a few of them have a description about some of the topic content in the show, and so some will search for a certain topic content. And as I mentioned, there's a host of files that have been singled out by Jeannie Rice. They've been curated out, and they specifically relate to either people who are being stepped through the worksheet process or people who are giving the powerful testimonials about the use of the tools. And so that can save you the time and the effort of trying to scroll through 11 years worth of shows. But it's a powerful resource. Again, it's just another thing that Michael and Jeannie offer free as they pursue their intention to make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Whether those people have any money to pay for it or not. So the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. Yesterday we were in our reading discussing, some would say deep diving into the Way of Mastery. We completed the first read-through of Lesson 18. And last night in the support group, we have a support group on Tuesdays and Thursday night. So last night we had a support group, and we listened to an hour of a talk by David White. David White, for those who don't know, is an English-Irish poet-philosopher. And he's so on target with what he talks about, and it's so in alignment with the tools in the Way of Mastery and the Course in Miracles and Guy Finley and Diedrich Wolzak and Byron Katie that he's actually been recruited by corporations in America as a poet philosopher. And he himself had the question, why do you want me to come there? And the person that recruited him said, because the world we've entered with the internet and the interconnectivity internationally and the scale of business going international is just too big and too deep and too rich for the old models and the old language about relationship and about connection and authority and structure. And he said to David, when I heard you talk today, I heard the language that's big enough. I heard inclusiveness, expansion, acceptance, openness, the willingness to be seen, the willingness to be heard, the willingness to share honestly, which At that time, the person that was recruiting, David White, said, that's what our leaders need to be willing to do. Some aren't able, and some aren't willing. But those that are able and willing can be taught. So the talk we were listening to was the door beneath everything. And the idea is, as we get busy, as we run around, as we have an aversion to facing certain things or experiencing certain things, we scurry by, we turn our face, we get distracted from the very thing that we need to face to grow and move forward. And as we run from it, we add energy to it and drag it with us wherever we go, as Michael Rice would say. And that's essentially the same wisdom that David White has tapped into. And David, just as a poet, speaks of it so eloquently that it can get in deeper for a lot of people. And for some, it just goes right over their head. But the idea is, I need to slow down. I need to be willing to embrace my life as it is. I need to let the essence of experiences teach me about life and about myself. And I can't do that if I'm running from it. I can't do that if I turn away from things that are unpleasant or difficult. So many of his writings are about facing difficulties. And the balance between gain and loss, activity and rest, you know, the flow of life, essentially. The very same thing that we're reading about in The Way of Mastery is just life. It's the core of what David White writes about. David has a piece in the book Consolations, Consolations. The subtitle of that book is The Solace, Nourishment, and Underlying Meaning of Everyday Words. And in that book, he has an entry on the word rest. And he says, rest is the conversation between what we love to do and how we love to be. Rest is the conversation between what we love to do and how we love to be. Rest is not stasis, but the essence of giving and receiving. Rest is an act of remembering, imaginatively and intellectually, but also physiologically and physically. We often hate ourselves for our procrastination when it is often only the deeply disguised need to rest deeply enough to reconstitute and reimagine our approach. To rest is to become present in a different way than through action. To rest is to become present in a different way than through action, and especially to give up on the will as the prime motivator of endeavor. Give up on the will as the prime motivator of endeavor, because the will has an endless outward need to reward itself through established goals. Now, when I read this, I'm put to mind of so many times we've talked about it in so many different ways. Great teachers. Einstein is one who says, we've been given the precious gift, the intuitive mind, and the faithful servant, the conscious logical mind, the rational mind. But we live in a culture that has forgotten the gift of intuition and creativity and elevated the servant, the tool that we were given, the conscious logical mind, to the level of master. And David White says, to rest is to become present in a different way than through action, and especially to give up on the will, that conscious, logical driving, I'm setting goals, I'm achieving them, I'm going to get this done, to give up on the will as the prime motivator of endeavor, with its endless outward need to reward itself through established goals. To rest is to give up on worrying and fretting and the sense that there is something wrong with the world unless we put it right. To rest is to fall back, literally or figuratively, from outer targets, not even to a sense of inner accomplishment or an imagined state of stillness, but to fall back to a different kind of meeting place, a living, breathing state of natural exchange. Exchange, the flow, giving and receiving. Rest is the conversation between what we love to do and how we love to be. Rest is not stasis. Static. It's the essence of giving and receiving. That's how he begins this writing. And at the end of it, he says, to rest is to move to a different kind of a meeting place. The living, the breathing. The breathing is in and out. It's inhale and exhale. It's the natural flow, a state of natural exchange of energies. At a later time, he wrote, the ability to take real rest is an art form. Strangely, it's almost a discipline, the discipline of putting things aside, especially putting aside the will and the false self, which is supported by endless endeavor. This is not to give up on the will, not to attack it, but to invite it back again as a good servant to the soul's desires instead of the heartless and exhausting taskmaster it becomes when we push it to the leading edge of our identity. When we mistake the conscious logical mind as our God, as our master, as our teacher, and we forget the precious gift of intuition, of insight. We muck it up. The ability to take real rest is almost an art form. Strangely, almost a discipline. The discipline of putting things aside, especially putting aside the will and the false self, which is supported by an endless endeavor. This is not to give up on the will, but to invite it back again as a good servant to the soul's desires, instead of making the will the heartless and exhausting taskmaster it becomes when we push it to the leading edge of our identity. This is about the balance. This is about the paradox. This is about the flow. We were reading in lesson 18 again about how we don't know anything and how we can rest in divine ignorance. And in this last segment, last couple segments of lesson 18, it gave us an exercise. A simple exercise to forgive and bless the past. And again, to forgive in this work means to dismantle any negative perceptions I've created about anyone or anything, including my past, including myself, including my brother and sister. And the exercise says, I sit in my chair for 5 minutes as the Christ, and after that 5 minutes is up, I admit my ignorance. I simply continue recognizing that I do not know what a single thing is or what it is for. Now, the will, the conscious logical mind, has labels and has history and has definitions and has meanings for everything I think and everything I see and everyone I see. But this exercise is exactly in alignment, to my way of thinking, to my eyes and ears, exactly in alignment with what David White is talking about in this writing on rest. And putting the conscious logical mind, or will, as David White calls it, putting it in its proper place within our lives as a simple tool, which comes right back to lesson one on page 5 in The Way of Mastery, where it says, you don't experience anything that you haven't, that is caused by anything outside of you. You only experience the effects of your own choice. A little later on the same page, it says, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. For indeed, the intellect is the aspect of mind that was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be the humble and, if you'll pardon the expression, very stupid servant of the awakened heart. The awakened heart in this work is what David White was just referring to as the soul. And the will is the intellect. And David White has been perhaps reading some of the same source material, but has come to the same kind of conclusion. If I push my intellect, if I push my conscious logical mind to the front, if I mistakenly believe that's my master, that's who I am, that's what defines me, then it becomes a heartless taskmaster, and I feel driven, and I'm never satisfied, and I'm constantly pursuing these goals. The same wisdom from different sources. Here's an exercise that says, I breathe and I sit in the chair as though I were Christ for 5 minutes. And when that is completed, I simply continue by recognizing that I truly don't know what anything is or is for. I don't know what any of my brothers and sisters need, now or in their lives in the past. I admit my ignorance, and then I simply say deliberately within my mind, I choose to forgive, that therefore dismantle any judgments and false perceptions I've created about the flow of creation and anything that comes into my awareness as the flow of creation as I move forward in life today. And I ask to be shown from some higher source of integrated wisdom and wholeness, in this case they're using the phrase Holy Spirit, I ask to be shown what is in need of my attention and blessing and allowance and surrender. And then, as I sit there, whatever comes into my field of vision or my thought, I say to it, object of creation, I forgive the judgment I've placed on you. I'm going to dismantle the judgment, the logic, the beliefs. I'm going to put aside the history I have with you and release it and embrace you just as you are in this moment. And I'm going to look upon the object and I'm going to say, I am Christ, and in this moment, I use time to its greatest glory. Beloved object, I bless you, I embrace you, I heal you. I accept you just as you are. I enter directly into this presence moment, as Guy Finley would say, and I let the truth of life act on me, and then I act in response, as Krishnamurti would say. I live more from the direct observation of what's in front of me rather than all of my thoughts and memories and judgments about it. And when I do that, David White says, I'm exercising the ability to take real rest as an art form, almost a discipline. It's the discipline of putting things aside. What am I putting aside? I'm putting aside all my judgments that it's wrong to take a nap in the middle of the day or stare off into space and daydream or just listen to some beautiful music on a nice stereo and just listen to the bird songs if I'm out for a walk without having some other music piped into my brain. Putting aside the judgments I have that I didn't do as good a job mowing the lawn or baking the cake or cleaning my house as I should have yesterday. Put it aside. Put aside my driven sense of self that thinks I better go get my to-do list and I better get more done today and people are not going to think nicely of me if I don't overachieve. I put that aside. Especially that concept of what are people going to think about me? That's what David White refers to as the false self. And the false self is supported by endless endeavor. The false self is defined by what I do and can accomplish. The true self, capital T, true self, just exists, has value simply because it exists. And David White says, very much like the Way of Mastery says, we don't want to attack the ego. We don't want to attack the intellect. It's given to us as a tool, a very simple tool. It has its uses. And David White says, to give up, to rest is not to give up on the will, but to invite it back again as a good servant to the soul's desires instead of the heartless an exhausting taskmaster it becomes when we try to make it do everything, when we try to force it to figure out how to get rid of our anger and our depression and how to change so-and-so so they don't do what I think is causing my anger or my sadness or my fear. So the idea in the last segment that we were reading, the last few segments that we were reading in Lesson 18 is to come again, to come over and over again into this seemingly bizarre attitude or perspective or exercise of putting aside the part of our brain that's been conditioned ever since we had language and reinforced over and over through the culture, through our education from preschool, kindergarten, and grade school, and high school, and for those of us that went on, anything after that. All of that was about we better know the answer. We better find a way to state the answer in a very concise, precise way. And this lesson 18 is telling us that everything we think we know is silliness. And that the Christ mind itself, Christedness, is about entering each moment clear and clean and fresh, not knowing anything. And somebody sent me a question about this, an email. How do you think about this? Well, you know, you don't really think about it. Your mind is going to spin and come up with all kinds of ways that it's not a good thing for you to just relax or to admit ignorance. The question was, I do have a question about being the Christ mind for 5 minutes. It seems that during that time, we're also to realize that we know nothing about anything. I've always thought of Christ as knowing everything. I can think of answers for my question, including the wisdom of the know-nothing mind, but I'd love to hear your take on it. So the idea is again, every time we talk about this, we need to get a little bit more clear and specific so we understand what we mean by certain words and what we mean when we say Christ. And in this case, almost every time, there might be a slip up in the book. I don't know, there's, I don't know how many pages, 400 and some pages in this book. So they might have slipped up at one point and said something that refers to Yeshua as the Christ. But over and over again, they try to clear up the Christ mind is not a person. It's not an entity. It's not singular. Birthing Christ in everyone who reads this work or hears this work is the object of it. So that doesn't mean to turn everybody into Yeshua. Right? That doesn't mean to turn everybody into a robot that thinks, what would Jesus do here, and then do what Jesus would do. That's living from the past, from belief, from shoulds. That's not what this kind of teaching is about. This teaching is about having us turn inside and understanding that our intellect is not our guide, unless we're trying to figure out why the car won't start. But to be on the path spiritually, to interact with others in a loving way, to dismantle my anger and fear and sadness, the reality management worksheet puts all of that thought process in the first three steps and then teaches me about another level of existence and flow and has me cancel all of that in the first three steps and ask to be shown something else. And there's the power of the reality management worksheet, is that it understands you're not going to think your way out of this problem of anger or fear or sadness or hurt or the resonating energies of traumas from your past. You don't think your way out of that. You put yourself in a position where you can have an experience that is bigger than, and you hear a story that is broader and deeper than anything that's come across your intellectual mind before. So as David White points out in the talks we were listening to, this is a real problem because we are not taught how to live in this open, allowing, childlike curiosity, questioning state. We are taught and programmed to think we're going to get punished if we don't have the answer. We're only going to get rewarded if we have just the right answer. And all of that has us moving our energy into the conscious logical and the intellectual and the rationalizing and valuing that above the breath and the flow, valuing that above direct observation with openness. And that's a trap. Michael Rice talks about how there's on these spiritual faculties of the mind. And for every spiritual faculty of the mind, the ego has a cheap knockoff. And so, you know, the most frequent, obvious, detrimental, cheap knockoff of the ego is, I'm going to figure this out. So rather than true perception, rather than insight and intuition, there's this, I'm going to figure it out. And Michael points out in the Laws of Living class that that's just the biggest trap there is. It's not the only trap, but it's the biggest one there is. Now, again, when you're talking about words and you're saying, all right, this is Christ, this is not Jesus, this is an office, this is a mindset, this is a consciousness that everyone can tap into and has access to. Christ is not a person. Christ is not an all-knowing being. Christ, the Christ mind, the Christ office, this status, this enlightened space that we can tap into goes beyond words and beyond anything that our intellectual mind can comprehend. That's why it is seemingly such a paradox. So what is it? What does it mean? How do you get there? I have no idea. All I know is, over and over, the Way of Mastery and many other spiritual traditions tell us that the intellect can't get us to enlightenment, but the intellect can be tuned to this alarm system that alerts us when we're moving away from that, when we're off the path with our thinking. That the intellect can notice when our emotional state goes to something tight or tense or unpleasant, and therefore it can be used to alert us to the fact that we're using our thoughts in an unproductive way. And what we do then is nothing we actively do after that moment of awareness that I'm in pain or fear or sadness or upset, nothing I actively do is as important as staying with the observation that I'm using a tool in my life in a way that's hurting me. And once I become clearly aware of that, fully clearly aware of that, I don't need to ask, should I keep hitting myself in the head with this hammer? Should I keep putting my hand up against the grinding wheel as it's, you know, hurting and stripping off skin? No, I don't need to ask. And the response that comes from me when I am in open, active observation directly with no filters, no distortions, no tensions, no turning away from, just clear, present moment awareness of the truth of life, then the truth of life acts on me and I flow in response and everything goes better. Regardless of what my conscious logical mind might tell me about this is good and this is bad and this is not a desirable outcome, the conscious logical mind can't comprehend. I had somebody talk to me today about their 9-year-old and they decided to have their 9-year-old do something that their 9-year-old didn't want to do. And I flashed back on when I was about 10 years old and I played baseball at a friend's house and I really connected with a ball and it flew on the fly out of the yard, over the fence and through the picture window of the family next door to the house where I was playing. And of course we all ran away in terror but I went home and I told my parents what happened and they marched me back down the street and they stood at the sidewalk and pointed and told me, get up there and knock on the door and tell these people that you're the one that broke their window and that you will pay for it. And I remember crying, sobbing, shaking, terrified, and getting halfway up that sidewalk and turning around and looking at my parents. And I remember how intensely I felt, I hate you. And I even said, I probably wouldn't have said it out loud because that's the way I was raised, but I know I was thinking it. I might have even mouthed it. Now, in that situation, my 10-year-old mind had no way to understand that it was going to be okay, that I was safe, and that that process was something that would stretch me to grow and move me in a direction of tapping into a strength I had no idea I had. And by the time I was in college, I had people asking me, oh my God, you know, you had such hard parents. And I would just chuckle because I was so much better equipped to handle life than the majority of people I went to college with. It wasn't even funny. And it was because my parents, who knew layers and levels of truths about life and me as a person and the way the world works that I had no clue about, they determined what should happen. Well, today, as I function as an adult, I am reminded on a regular basis, and the Way of Mastery in Lesson 18 wants me to wake up and really pay attention to the fact that I don't really know anything. I'm sitting here as a consciousness that's only interacting with the world, for the most part, 80 or 90-some percent of it is through what my senses tell my mind and what my mind remembers about the past and plays as pictures, and it's very, very limited. And it doesn't matter how much I plan and how much I set goals and dream and scheme and network with other people and build. And that doesn't matter compared to what's going on beyond anything my intellectual mind and my senses can register. I remember as a number of years ago now, I sat with somebody and they were talking about how it seems hopeless. And I said, you know, I'm called to let you know that I remember when my kids were, you know, 5 years old, 4 and 5 years old. It was only 25 years ago. And I remember what I thought at that time I needed to have and do and be in order to be happy. And what my plans were for the future were all these things about, you know, the family staying together and my doing this and that in my job and my saving this much money and all these things. Getting this kind of notoriety and having these kind of... And I said to the person, and the fact of the matter is, as I sit here today, I have almost nothing that I thought I needed to have 25 years ago in order to be happy. I thought this is... You know, this is the goal, these are the set of goals, this is what I need to achieve, this is how this has to turn out, this person has to act this way and that, I have to stay married, my kids have to get through college, or whatever it was. And as I sit here today, I have almost none of it. And at the same time that's true, I have a deeper level of contentment and more frequent times of joy in my life than I ever knew was possible 25 years ago. Because 25 years ago, most of what I knew about joy was about happiness. It wasn't about joy. It was about the buzz and the stimulation of gratification when this new item was purchased or this task was accomplished or this person complimented me. So this process that we're being asked to step into in Lesson 18 is just a little bit more crystallized version of what we've been introduced to from the very beginning of the Way of Mastery, which is we really don't know much of anything. As I sit here now, 80 or 90% of whatever shows up in my brain is coming from what little bits of information my conscious logical mind can track about my senses and my memory of the past, right? If you look at the video by Anil Seth about hallucinating perception, some of these other scientists of ours that study perception, they let us know that the light energy that hits our eyes and stimulates the nerves in our eyes that go back and stimulate the brain. That only accounts for about 20%, maybe not even 20%, but at the most, 20% of the information that our brains use to form the pictures and reach the conclusions and create the meanings that our brain creates. So we are truly, just like Jethro Tull would say, living from the past. And when you think about that, when you realize that your eyes only see less than 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum, and your ears are only registering less than 1% of the vibratory spectrum. And then your conscious logical mind is maybe, if it's lucky, registering 2, 3, or 4% of that. It's just logical, scientific sense that says we don't really know anything. Just the other day over the weekend, I was listening to a National Public Radio interview with a scientist, and he was talking about the absolute embarrassment of our current level of science and how shamed they are as scientists, our premier scientists. Because the fact of the matter is, they've now become aware of the fact that dark matter and dark energy make up probably 80% of our universe, that our scientists, with all of their scanning devices and all of their electron microscopes and all of their Webb infrared telescopes and the Hubble, and our scientists are studying matter, which is only about 20%. That's their best guess right now. They might find out it's only a half of 1% of what's in the universe. So dark matter and dark energy make up 80% of our universe, and we aren't able to understand it at all. We can't see it. We can't measure it. We can only, it's like the wind. We get to see when the trees move, but we don't see it. We don't understand it. So then bring that down to this situation. You're in your life every day, and you've been trained to think you're so smart and you've got the answer and you're a good boy or girl because you get a gold star for stuff that is so minuscule and such a tiny percentage of what's actually going on in life and in the world, that of course it makes sense to rest into something else. Fortunately, we've been given another way of perceiving, another source of power, of creativity, of understanding. It's just not logical. It's not intellectual. I can't get there by figuring it out. So David White, Guy Finley, Way of Mastery, Course in Miracles, Byron Katie, they ask us to question. Rainier Maria Rilke, living in the question is so important. Gently opening into the question without demanding the answer is so important to the process of growth, of learning, of being in the flow. Because as soon as we think we know, we shut off learning. As soon as we judge, we move out of the flow of life. As soon as we judge, we pull ourselves into this fantasy of being able to be separate from the world around us. I'm right, he or she is wrong. There can't be separation. There can only be the fantasy of separation. And yet, the power of creation is given unto each and every one of us, and we can use it to create the fantasy of being separate. We can create rationalizations for our anger. We can create a specific sense of self as separate from the flow of creation. It doesn't make any sense. Even logically, that doesn't make any sense. But that's what we've been trained to do, and so that's what we do. And because the input of our senses is so solid, is so obvious, blatant, sometimes distractingly so, and because that's the focus of what our training has been ever since we were infants by our families and our cultures, we don't tune into, we don't access, we don't strengthen our ability to receive impressions, to breathe, to make the home in the breath, to observe rather than to judge. And yet, all these spiritual traditions are calling us to practice it and develop that skill and move back into conscious relationship with an entirely different way of interacting with life and the world than what our conscious logical mind can offer us. So Christ does not know everything because Christ is not a knowing. Christ is this state of mind, this flow of energy, this openness, this experience of the wholeness of life that understands the intellect is just a little tool. And the intellect is the only thing that can judge. The Christ mind can't judge. The Christ mind can discern, can see differences, but it can't say this is better than that because it understands everything is the energy of creation. There is no separation. There is only the dream of separation. There is only the pain and suffering that comes from the fear of not being able to reconnect. There is only, as the book talked about in a previous lesson, maybe in the beginning of lesson 18, there is only the guilt that we create when we think we have separated ourselves from our Creator. And that's, there's a silliness in that because you can't be separated from your Creator. So it's the guilt that's created in the dream of separation, so guilt itself is a dream. And yet, as this book points out over and over again, within an illusory world, an illusion has great power. And yet, as soon as we see the illusion for what it is, it loses its power over us. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. This has just been a blending of work, David White, Guy Finley, Way of Mastery, and a bit of a review about Lesson 18 and some attempts to make some statements about what's the value of being divinely ignorant, of understanding how little we know, of learning to live more and more fully and deeply in the questioning state. So 563-999-3581. We've got about 7 minutes left. If you have a comment or a question, we'd love to hear it. Give that number a call and press 1 on your phone. As I mentioned last night, we had a support group and we had the David White poetry. We also had somebody do a very powerful worksheet. And we had some wonderful sharings from different members. We had somebody join us last night who hasn't been there probably in 15 years or 11 years or something. She wasn't aware of the internet show, so it was probably 11 years since she's been to a support group. And she came for the first time, and as so many people do, she made the comment that, wow, there's just so much here, it's kind of overwhelming. And so we're open to having new people join us, and as she joined us, she made a suggestion, and maybe she didn't, but she asked, is this forgiveness pattern that I was reading in the release portion of the worksheet, is that available in an audio form? Now, I've made it available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website for years now, but there it was. Brand new person come in, ask a question, and it struck me as, well, you know what? That's probably a very useful thing to do. So in the near future, as I carve out the time to do it, I will do a recording of me reading the forgiveness pattern, and that will be an option that people can click and play as they're doing their own release, if they're doing their worksheets at home. Because many people have told me that that adds a powerful aspect to the benefits and effectiveness of the worksheet process. And, you know, I don't lay any claim to that. That is literally just me stealing from Julie Haverstick and Jeannie Rice and Michael Rice and other people that have done a lot of worksheets that I've heard them. And it's me bringing in stuff from the EMDR work I do in therapy and just blending these phrases in and turning that release process part of the reality management worksheet into a bit of a meditation and opening and softening and allowing and inviting insight and intuition and connections. So in the near future, if all goes well, that will be another thing that's available of the mindshiftersacademy.org website, and it'll be on the educational materials page where the short version of the reality management worksheet and the PDF file of the forgiveness pattern is already available. So if you have a comment or a question or an idea about, hey, this would be great to have. I mean, website, the mindshiftersacademy.org website, because somebody else made the request a few years ago, I did a recording of me reading the worksheet, not anyone's specific worksheet, but having an audio version of the seven-step worksheet process that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice make available. That came from a suggestion. So it's a team effort, and if you've got any thoughts, even if you think they're silly, you can give us a call, 563-999-3581, and or send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or jeannie@jeannie@yagain.org. And contribute to the process, to the expansion, to the creativity. I've put the request out to one of our group members who wrote a beautiful piece of poetry or prose last night in the middle of the group. And if she decides to let me have it, I will read that soon on the air in a future show. It's a piece that she was moved to write because David White was talking about accepting of self, being accepting of yourself, even those things that you would consider as imperfections, they are part of the perfection. And David White was talking about the carver, the sculptor working with wood, who works with what you might call the imperfections in the wood, the traits in the wood, and turns them into the expression, the beauty, the perfection of the end result of the sculpture. And as she was listening to that, she's a writer and she was moved to write, and it was beautiful. It really was beyond words for me. So I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form. And everything else that we think about and pretend that we are is false. And I will hope that Jeannie Rice is available. There she is.
I am here. Thank you. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday. August the 10th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563 999 3581 and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just say, you know, we're still making some changes to the catalog on the website, and it's going to be really awesome when we finish it. And we'll probably run some discount tickets or something to try to get rid of some of the that we have. Of course, everybody seems to be going for the streaming now, but anyway, we're going to be doing a few things there. And this week, tomorrow, we are not going to do the book club because Yinka is on vacation. But this Saturday, we are doing the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So if you're interested in participating in that and you're not part of the group that has been with us for several months now, I think we're up to, you know, as you're on there longer, like the regular, if you're doing just 1 month, the Mind Shifters is what's on the website, which has three sections with 13 mind shifters in each section. And then if you're on there for in part of the membership for 2 months, then we're going to add you another section. So we are up now to, I think, 12 sections with 13
Number
mind
12
shifters
is on.
In each section. Yeah. So anyway, so that's just an added plus for being in the extended membership. And so we welcome you to join us. Drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. Or if you've got our phone numbers, give us a call and let us get you signed up.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. As once again, we get to look into these awesome principles from the first century Aramaic. And by the way, if there's anybody that knows or knew Joel Goldstein when he was in his body, that happens to be in the Nashville area, Saturday I'll be going over there. There is a memorial that'll be happening Saturday morning at 11 o'clock at a place called The Farm. So there's an announcement on Facebook if you care to join us. Other than that, I know that Michael said he was going to be on. Is he in the queue there, Jeannie? Seven seven zero area code.
Apologies, I was down the door putting a package for Celinda outside the door. Yes, he is on. Okay. So I'm going to turn his microphone on. 770. You're on the air.
Good day, folks. How are you doing?
We're rocking. Welcome.
I like it. I like it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we had a fun meeting this morning. We project that we're working on now that we're starting to understand more about gardening is creating some community gardens near some of the more indigent parts of town. And so we met with a gentleman this morning who's considering, or at least he's, you know, knows the local area very well and so is giving some advice. And he works with kids that were young people that we're hopefully going to integrate into that project as we start to build some soil and create some gardens so that folks in the community can just, well, learn about gardening, get their hands on it, and gather food as they need it. So that's this was an interesting meeting this morning.
Sounds very promising. Wow. Great. I would
I'm
like
excited
to see
about
more
it.
Schools. Yes, indeed. I would like to see more schools be involved in projects or have, they usually have a sizable chunk of property around the school, and that's been one of my thoughts for a long time.
Actually, one of the people he referred us to. Yeah, one of the places he referred us to, a town about 15 minutes from here, and Appalachian group, and they've actually got gardens going in about 60 schools. So we're going to be talking with them as well and getting some advice and looking at you know, possible locations that are in close to indigent communities or communities that are, you know, with food prices going the way they're going. So that's one project that is going in a a community that's not too far away from here. So we're going to be looking to those folks for some advice and some input and see what we can create.
Exciting.
It is.
Sounds really nice.
So I'm really enjoying the ongoing conversation that we're having.
Well, I am certainly enjoying and blessed immensely by them.
Good. You had a whole weekend to process that last one. Seemed to be pretty impactful. How's that shaken out for you?
Good. Very well. Very well. And, yeah, just lots of questions swirl around in my mind all the time. So,
great.
Wonderful opportunity to be able to speak with you all. Yes. Yeah, so one question about when to do worksheets, when not to do worksheets, when to just process in your mind. And I think that might be where Dr. Tim was going as he reads, I think we're at chapter 18. I haven't been able to get on the last couple of days. But let me just go here. If I am, and I think all of us face this, if not on a daily basis, then weekly, we come across someone, maybe a family member, maybe someone we know, that says something or does something that we take negatively. And when is a time to think about a worksheet versus how to process that just in our minds, breathe through it, and move on?
Well, you know, when people first start doing worksheets, it's usually on what one would term the negative, the things that are disturbing in one's life. But actually, as people advance, they also start doing worksheets around seemingly positive things in their lives, because recognizing if what you really want to have is a pure, direct experience of actuality, you've got to be out of your mind. And if you're living in a perceptual construct, the good, the bad, or the ugly, then you're living in a construct in your mind. And, you know, as Jeannie pointed out in that last call, we had the information about how the time delay. In fact, Jeannie, you were sharing another piece that you'd found in looking at the website that you shared with us on Friday. And you want to share that again?
Sure. And it was actually yesterday.
Yesterday, yes, right. That was on Friday. Yeah.
With Jonas Salk.
With Salk, yeah, the Salk Institute.
Yeah. So the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in La Jolla, California, they're an independent nonprofit organization dedicated to fundamental discoveries in life sciences. And I put the link in yesterday's notes. I can put it in for today, too. But they did some studies, and they have proven that from the time that your eye receives information through light to the time that your brain turns it into what it makes up as the reality of what it quote-unquote sees, that there's 70
perception
milliseconds delay between the time that it gets to the eye and the time your brain makes up something. And that they call that the flash jump. And so your brain actually generates something to fill in that space so that you don't realize there is the delay. And so that was pretty cool. And
but share the experiment that they did, the color changing.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So I didn't read the whole thing, but it was like that there was a visual that everybody looked at. And so there were like objects in the back. And as the color, like, moved across the screen, it changed colors. And they asked people to identify at what point. So they had objects that they could, you know, at this point or at this point or at this point. It's when the color changed. And they were always incorrect about when it changed because their brain just made it up when they saw it. But it was actually because of that delay that it happened sooner than what their brain registered that they saw it. I think I'm explaining that right.
They had a way of measuring the time that it took for the brain to register, and that time delay was the time it took the brain to generate its construct.
Right.
Cool. So if I'm living in the constructs of my mind, by definition, you know, in order for, like, let's say for my computer, if I'm going to put 2 + 2 into my computer, my keyboard, if it's going to come up with an answer, the only way it can come up with an answer is if the answer is in the memory bank. If there's no program for 2 + 2, and if I put that in, it's not going to come up with anything. So by definition, with the computer, in order for it to, quote unquote, answer something, the information has to be there. Therefore, its answers are all, well, the perceptual mind is exactly the same. And ultimately, my take is ultimately what we want to do is drop living in perception and live in direct interaction with the actual world. So forgiveness is appropriate at any instant that perception is happening. And when we become skilled at collapsing perception, then rather than living in perception, we get to live in what becomes a very difficult state to language with words, because words are also a representation of the past. You know, that whole idea of babble.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to use the device that is the problem to overcome the problem. And that just kind of makes for an interesting challenge.
So thank you both for sharing on that. So when someone says, oh, that's foolish, I could take that as meaning, depending on my background, environment, all that, take it to believe, oh, the meaning I'm foolish. But the person right next to me, it wouldn't be on their radar at all. And I'm understanding that's the way it could happen with people, correct?
Right.
Okay. So when I'm taking it as, oh, they may mean I'm foolish, then that is a perception on my part, and that's what needs to be collapsed.
Correct.
Okay.
And especially if it's coming from a disturbed state. You know, someone tells me I'm foolish, and if I don't have any issue with that particular phrase or that particular idea, I might just come back with, yeah, well, that's foolish too. So there may be nothing there to particularly work on, but ultimately to live in the present, it doesn't happen through the mind. And it can't be described directly with the tools that the mind has. And of course, language is just one of the tools. That's why, for instance, you know, we hear people getting up and doing their dogma and doctrine routine as though their words are true. And if you recognize that the truth can't be spoken in words because words are not an extension of truth, when the mind is collapsed, when we're willing to be out of our minds and let that collapse, and we're willing to be in a space of honoring truth, then what's going to happen is the actuality, the truth of what is going on in the actual world of the Creator, there, because I'm not busy with something going on in my mind, then that energy of truth has the ability to enter and rewrite the content of my structure and bring correction.
Michael, could you tell us that one more time, please?
Sure.
I didn't quite get you there.
Sure. So if we're going to use a definition of the word truth, my offering would be that truth is what is. You know, it's what's actually occurring as opposed to my perception of it. So if I'm in a particular experience and my mind comes up with a construct about it, what I know is that construct, you know, according to the Salk Institute, that measurement they did, that construct comes from a time frame of about 70 milliseconds ago. So it's 70 milliseconds in the past. It obviously isn't the truth. So if I can drop my perception, if I can be in this state where everything is just soft and relaxed and open in me, and I'm not locking in on a perception, then I make my mind, my physiology, my structure available to truth, and truth is going to come in and rewrite what's in my structure. It will bring correction, the actuality, the energy of the actuality compared to my reality. My reality is going to be rewritten. And over time, as I move out of perception that, you know, for so many people, an event happens and it triggers something in them, and then that 70 milliseconds later, their mind serves up a perception. The perception the mind is serving up, for so many people, so often, has virtually nothing to do with what actually occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that example you use, somebody says, oh, that's foolish. And so up comes the defense of, oh, I'm not foolish. Who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. A whole thing that's got nothing to do with the actuality of what's happening. And as I live in that space of honoring truth and being available to truth, you know, one of the ways Dr. Tim often says it is, you know, approaching something as though what I think I know about this thing could be either totally wrong or only partially true, and therefore being willing to have it teach me. So when I'm available to truth, when I'm willing to honor truth, then literally the energetic patterns that I have from the past, which are fabricated from my past, can be overwritten, rewritten, restructured if I'm actually available to the energy of what is the truth in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We're trying to use words to describe something. You know, go back to Yeshua, and he says, there's so many things I want to say to you, but you can't hear them. Why can't we hear so many of the things he said? Because our mind's busy with a perception from the past. Fulfilling goals from the past.
So when Dr. Tim was talking, I think it was last week, about the 90, I know Joan Rosenberg calls it the 90-second rule, and I have tried to incorporate that into my life somewhat, and he was talking about, I think he was referring to Jill Bolt Taylor last week in the same similar respect of this 90-second rule. So if you feel anger welling up and you breathe through it and wait, I mean, 90 seconds is a whole lot more than 70 milliseconds. So
right.
how does that all work? How does one go through that process in their mind?
Well, I'm not particularly familiar with this idea of the 90-second rule. That's a new idea for me.
Okay.
However, you know, there is a thing in our culture that says, well, before you react, count to 10. And
mm-hmm.
I think it would probably be similar to the, you know, count to 10 before you react. And that is that you give yourself time for questioning what your mind is showing. You give yourself time rather than just taking what the mind serves up out of its pain and you know, maybe blasting somebody with that. You stop, you process the energy of the blast, and you're able to act rather than react. So consciously engage in a chosen behavior rather than simply redoing an act, reacting from a previous program. There's a term in the computer world called a TSR. Are you familiar with a TSR?
Total system reboot?
No.
Or,
terminate and stay resident.
No,
terminate
I'm
and stay
not.
Resident.
Not so, familiar with that one. Tell me.
Like, for instance, on your cell phone, you know, you've got the operating system going, and if you open a program that has not been opened on your phone, it's going to take a certain amount of time for that to happen, for it to boot up and for it to operate. But there are, if you were able to look in the background of your phone, you know, if you've got 100 programs, 100 apps on your phone, probably at least 30 of them are what they call TSRs. The program is not in operation at this moment, but it's resident in memory, so you don't have to restart it and bring it into operation. So they're called TSRs. So it's instant. So a TSR is something you just doesn't need to boot up and activate itself. It's just, it isn't operating at the moment, but in an instant it will be operating because it's resident in memory. And so the person who simply reacts out of what's happening, it's like there are TSRs in the mind. Oh, I need to protect myself. Somebody might attack me. Oh, I need to be careful I don't lose. You know, whatever those TSRs are, and they're the things that we tend to react to. And by taking 90 seconds or counting to 10, we can, I think, overcome the instant impact of a TSR that would have us perhaps opening our mouths and saying or doing things that we might later regret.
Wonderful. I can grasp onto that. So is this thinking right that this would be immediate? And this is important to save further turmoil in conversation or relationship. And then if it's still, because I'm going to take a step back. Where I was having difficulty thinking through this is I was thinking, oh, if someone says something that is in my perception that gets me triggered, well, how do I get through that and then realize I need to do a worksheet on this? So back to what you were explaining, this would be a process to get through it immediately, and then if it's still an issue in my mind, then I would consider doing a worksheet. Would that be a correct understanding?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Or no, I might recognize, this is something I've been through so many times, so I now have a quick fix, you know, something that instantly takes me out of my pain or my anger or whatever it is, the response I would normally make. And then just by conscious awareness, I realize I've got some work to do around that, so I'm going to put it on my worksheet list. Or I might, you know, I'm in the middle of something, I'm in a meeting, and I can't, you know, withdraw and sit down and do a worksheet, but I can look at, as I see my blood starting to boil and it seems to be about what that person said, I can recognize that I have a goal for that person, and it's the goal that's resonating my boiling blood, you know, getting that going. Mm-hmm. And so I can just quickly locate the goal. You know, if you look at the, I don't know if you've got a copy of the bookmark, but on the back of it, there's a short form worksheet, and I locate the goal, I cancel the goal, I restore love. Just like I can do that as a quick fix as well, till I get to the point where my mind is always functioning out of a space connected to love. And when it's not, I realize there's my next piece of work.
Lovely. Tell me about that bookmark.
Forgiveness removes the TSRs. Pardon me?
I'll finish your thought there. The book.
Just that forgiveness would remove the TSRs from the mind.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So once we cancel that goal, that's the step toward forgiveness.
Yeah, canceling the goal is, you know, in the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shabag or shabak, and it literally translates to cancel. When I locate the goal that's driving this pained perception and I cancel it, since the driver's been removed, the perception, the reaction, is going to collapse. Now, I may not sit down and do a full worksheet in this moment. I'm sitting in a meeting. That's just not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But I can cancel the goal, take a breath, reconnect to love, and carry on with the meeting or the conversation.
Okay.
And the purpose of life is to trigger us.
So we can process and step higher.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason we're triggered is because there's a disintegrative energy somewhere within the structure. And disintegrative energy, you know, where there's pain perception, that energy of that pain perception is stored somewhere in tissue. Where that kind of energy is stored in tissue, there's a literal physiological disease. On the level where we think of physiology, there's a literal physiological disease going on. So where there's pain perception, there's on the level where there's the belief in physical, there's physical disease. And where there's physical disease, there's pain perception. So we can begin to approach and, you know, make our, go back to that conversation we had about the half of the audience that, or the disciples that left Yeshua saying, too hard a saying. You can work on those things that seem to be too hard a saying the instant that they happen. And when you develop a personal code that demands that you do that rather than give vent to the steam that comes up, then you're becoming more and more of a conscious operator of your own mind rather than being run by the mind and the generational patterns.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that bookmark. Is that something on the website?
Oh, there's a bookmark with the commitment on it. And I'll drop one in the mail to you. On one side of it's a commitment. On the other side, there's a short form of the worksheet, just a three-step. And basically the three steps is, or actually what I'll do is I'll just take a picture of it and send it to you. Or maybe, Jeannie, you've got a link to it you can send. And so it's the three steps of I locate the goal that's driving my perception at the moment. I cancel the goal. And I reconnect to love. So locate, cancel, reconnect. Quick three-step process you can do. LCR, locate, cancel, reconnect.
That is neat. Very nice. Very nice. Thank you.
Give me a good quick fix.
Yes. Yeah, because I was thinking about this, you know, being new to this all for a couple of months. I'm thinking, how does this work? But this is a great this morning. I'm really grasping it. So something that caught my attention early in the conversation, that positive things may also need a worksheet. Could you
Yes.
expound further on that one? That one's really got me now.
Sure. Well, if I'm living in perception, I'm living in the past. It doesn't matter my perception is of the good, the bad, or the ugly. I'm in the past. There's no future in the past. There's only replicating the past. And so most people start out doing their work around the things in life around which they hold pain. But then realizing that I really am not interested in being in the past, so I'm going to just collapse perception until I can live relatively free of perception. And then I'm in, that's when I can live in what in Yeshua's teachings was called the mind of Christ. I'm not living in perception anymore. I'm not living in the mind of carbon-based memory, the mind of Adam, Adamos, the red clay, the mind of man. You know, that passage where at the Garden of Eden, Yeshua addresses Peter as Satan. He says, get thee behind me, Satan, for you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of God. All perception is the mind of man. So ultimately, you want to free yourself of perception. Unless there's something, you know, I've got a project I need to do in front of me, and I've got information in my mind about it. I call on that information, and I use that information to guide my behavior. But in terms of living my life, I live in relationship to the actuality as love would relate to it rather than as perception would relate to it. And it's like, again, you know, Yeshua says about that. He says, there's so many things I want to say to you. you can't hear them. And even when we hear them, achieving it is a whole different thing. So it's an ongoing intensive process and study.
So even good things, if we're in the past, are not really good.
Right. You know, well, in terms of the way people live, you know, the average human life on the earth, you're living in the good things. Hey, that's wonderful. I mean, that's a big step up from where most people are living, but it's not actual life yet.
And hence the term, saying, I've come to give you life, but more abundantly, not where we really want to live.
And Yeshua speaks to that gentleman who was, you know, yay, I like what you're doing. I'm going to come follow you, but first I need to go bury my mother and my father. Mm-hmm. The tradition, as a young Jewish man, the oldest son had to literally stay with, take care of his parents till they died and buried them. And what Yeshua said is, rather than going and doing that tradition, let the dead bury the dead. Let those who are living in the past, let those who are living in perceptual constructs of the past, who are not alive in God's mind now, let them do that. But if you're going to actually take on this challenge that I'm giving you, then now's the time to do it. Don't tell me you're going to go off for the next 20 years to take care of your parents and then you'll come back, because 20 years from now, you won't even remember this conversation occurred.
Mm-hmm. Serious thought there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is great. Thanks for clarifying those thoughts for me.
Honored and delighted, sir. Any other thoughts for you today? Any other questions you jotted down?
Feel like switching
or
gears
insight?
Totally?
Sure, go for it.
I often wondered and have looked into this a lot concerning the Hebrews in the desert before we had even met. And I'm wondering, I know we had talked about that, you had explained last week, I think it was, how these folks are in the desert, 35 square mile area. I'm wondering if connections between calibrations, concerns, days of the week, all these things, is there any light you can shed on that from what you might know or have looked at in the past? Any thoughts in general about the days of the week and the calendar?
Not particularly.
The world? Mm-hmm. Okay. I always wondered where they got their time from. And I know there's a lot of different areas of thought there. A lot of different areas.
There's an interesting video, and I'll have to see. It's been years since I've seen it. Jeannie might remember it. Jeannie's just coming to the room. Do you recall, Jeannie, the video that we watched? I'm trying to remember the guy's name. This is probably... it's way back when we first met. But he did a video on calendars and time. And yeah, Mayan calendar, right. Do you remember the name of that?
I've got it.
Okay, Jeannie will find it. She had just come in the room, so I asked her about it. There's an interesting video on that topic that I think you'll find very in fact, I need to watch it again. It's been years, probably 15, 17 years since I watched it, but it's interesting. A guy who's looking at and talking about calendars and time.
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, about 10 years ago, the big hype of the Mayan calendar was 8 to 10 years ago. That was on the horizon because of 2012, I believe it was. But this deal with calendars goes way back, and of course, and all the different thoughts, just interesting. And
Ian Lundgold.
That's it, Ian Lundgold. I love
what is that
you keep
again,
things
please?
Filed. The gentleman that I'm talking about, if you just go to YouTube and put this in, Ian, I-A-N Lundgold, L-U-N-G-O-L-D, I believe. And put the word Mayan in your search, and you'll find a video that he does.
And,
it's pretty interesting.
And I'll put the direct link in the notes today. It's actually www.mayanmagix, mayanmagix.com/Ian. But I'll put it in there.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank you, Jeannie.
Awesome. Well, any other thoughts, sir?
I think that will do it for today.
Cool. Well, we'll hold the space and look forward to the next round of conversation, appreciating the ways that you're thinking about the work and, questioning and drawing out a deeper understanding. It's awesome. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. It's a wonderful pleasure. And grateful to have this, the time, the platform. It's really, really a blessing to put these things in perspective, hear your thoughts and all of that. So, till tomorrow.
All right. Have an awesome day. Blessings.
Thank you, y'all, too.
We have another hand up.
All right.
Area code 610. You're on there.
Hi.
I think it's Susan.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Young lady, we haven't heard your voice in several days. I was just thinking that when I finished the show, I was going to pick up the phone and call you. We hadn't heard from you in a few days. See how it's going. So glad to hear your voice.
Thanks. Well, I've hesitated on talking about this because your show is for and with mentally healthy people who are searching and growing, and I have an issue with, one of my grandsons, both grandsons. Actually, I'll start with a little bit of a promising report on Luke. He is in rehab. It's evidently not a very high-powered place. He sees a therapist once a week, but he wrote me a handwritten letter. He has no iPhone. He wrote and said he's been sober for 10 days, and that was about a week ago, so he wants very badly to be sober, and he understands about the the intervention, and he wishes he had heeded it back then. It's been 2 years. But he asked for worksheets, and I sent him. I can email him via the facility, and if I say for Luke Moorhead, they will deliver emails.
Right.
So the family are all sending him emails every single day. And he turned 24 yesterday. But I sent him several attachments of various different kinds of websites and worksheets, including the PowerPerson one, which is very important. I don't know. I won't hear from him whether he's using them or got them, but that's one of the things he asked for. So I found that very heartening.
If you would do me a favor.
Yeah.
And send me the email address. I'll drop them a note and say hello and tell them we're holding the space for them.
I'd love it. That would be great. That would be great. Everything,
cool.
I hope, helping. He's very depressed, very frightened. His girlfriend left him, and that was the cause of bottoming out. He wouldn't have faced
right.
his drinking if it hadn't been that in blackouts, he abuses her. But
right.
She left. She dropped him off at his mother's house in Florida and said, I'm gone, and that's it. And we don't know where she is. We don't have any way of contacting her.
Right.
So he's in tremendous anguish and uncertainty because he wants her back.
Well,
I could talk more about yeah.
My offering would be that his anguish is what he's been drinking about. This is just like kind of the crisis aspect of it, but what he's really in anguish about is what he's carrying unresolved in his mind. And now that he doesn't have the regular use of an anesthetic, he's getting to face it.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I
and
certainly join
happening.
You in holding the space for him.
Thanks. And if you'd hold it for Jacob too, because he has the Jacob we all knew seems to be completely gone, unavailable. He is at a facility too and resenting us terribly for sending him there, writing. He does have an iPhone and he's been sending us, you know, abusive. I sent Jeannie a couple of texts and a cartoon I
Brian.
Know, which is very rapid, just about what it's been like. He's going to excuse himself from the rehab place in order to get back to school. And against the wishes or direction or suggestions of Al-Anon, we are still going to pay for his school and room and board, although we had to take his apartment away. He had a single apartment, and the rehab center said he should not be living alone because he'll just
right.
use substances and he won't be well. So
yeah.
get him into a dorm or into a halfway house. Well, there are no halfway house. I've been on the phone so much, my ear is falling off. There are lots of resources in Pittsburgh, but no halfway house for a dual diagnosis, you know, mental health and addiction issues. But it's with,
that's
it's
amazing.
What you said with Luke. It's his trauma, and he won't face it. And
yep.
now he sees everyone who loves him as an abuser, just
yep.
the way his dad was. And he's not looking at it. And so that's, we can't find him a dorm room either because the counseling center at his school says all we have is doubles, and we would put him in with a freshman, but we can't put him in with a freshman in the state of mind
no.
that he's in. So
right.
he's coming home and we have nowhere to put him, and he can't live here. He won't want to live here. It's 5 hours away from school. So it's been extremely stressful, and doing worksheets
yeah.
hasn't really been that useful until I've done a lot of journal writing. And in the journal writing, a lot of goals pop up, and then I can do the worksheets off the
right.
spewing of the journals, you know, just recounting what's been happening and how hard it is
right.
to concentrate on anything. And I know it's all... These are all goals I'm holding and reactions and my own. I'm having a look at all the triggers and stuff, but I'm just reporting basically. I don't even know what to ask, except if you can continue sending support, that would be great. Just the prayers and that's pretty much it.
Of course. Now, just another thought. If he's set his life up so that he cannot go back to school reasonably, then
mm-hmm.
is the option to confront him with that and say, well, you know, you're not in a position where you can, therefore you might as well stay in that program and get yourself cleaned up.
He doesn't think he has a problem. He wrote at first, he said, I've been dismissed from the detox wing of this program. It didn't take me long at all to detox. I didn't have that much in me, and you're really insulting me by saying I'm addicted. He said, so I've been put in the mental health wing, and the mental health wing evidently isn't getting very far because he's probably able to present himself very well to them. That's what his father did. father is...
As he's doing well, yeah.
Tremendously, yeah, doing well in the world. He's a therapist of all things and has many clients who adore him and say he's helping them a lot, and perhaps he has. But his home life is a secret. It's a secret. And so I'm sure Jacob can present himself, and he probably is, just convincing them that we're a pile of monsters over here, and we're sitting here helpless again, which is a familiar feeling these days.
So might that be the space to simply say, well, I got that you've projected we're the monsters, but now what you need to deal with is your school won't put you with anybody there because of your reputation and your behavior. Like sooner or later, he's going to have to confront that. And it's not you doing it. It's the school saying we don't have anywhere for him because of his behavior.
True. Yeah. At this point, he's not communicating with Tim and me at all. He's writing letters to the next layer of relatives, telling them we owe him a formal apology for our abuse and all this sort of thing. So maybe he does have to show up here in a couple of weeks and get his stuff in his car and go somewhere. And maybe if I could just relax, I could just let that happen and have him go to a place where they have no place for him. I don't know. It takes a lot of guts to just let things happen.
That's tough. It's tough. Embracing the three of you in our hearts.
Thank you. Yeah. How did we bring this about? We asked for it. Hard to accept, but that'd be true.
Well, and of course, notice each layer of work that any of us does. You're in touch with a new layer of thinking that was not in conscious awareness previously. And
maybe
I
don't know what that would be right now.
So the asker's in the unconscious. How did we ask? It's not something that figure out with one's head. It's something one processes through. And ultimately, can you take responsibility for what Jake does? Unfortunately, you can't. You've no doubt listened to a show where I've done the thing where you release attachments. Have you done that with Jake by any chance?
I don't remember the show, and I'm not sure what that is, and I don't think he would want to talk to me.
Okay. Well, this is something we can just do here now between us. It doesn't directly involve Jake, but where Jake has the ability to come back and pull strings in your mind. The attachments, the emotional attachments that you have with him, that he can pull and play on those. And there's a really, really simple process that I've seen make like major instantaneous differences in people's relationships without any external communication or anything externally happening. I've just seen major shifts occur. And it's a simple thing that just takes 2 minutes if you're willing to do it.
Okay.
And see what result comes from it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it takes getting centered and focused in a place in your brain, your awareness, and then verbally releasing attachments to Jake, asking Ruka to release those energetic strings that he knows how to pull so well to keep you engaged in trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd like, we can go through it and see what impact it had. I've seen other cases where really didn't do anything, but I've seen cases where it's made like just, especially in close relationships, made for major shifts. So if you'd like, I can guide you through it. Okay.
Okay.
Well, anyone else, if you've got someone, anyone that's listening, if you've got someone that you have emotional reactions to, And you're doing that seesaw of pulling emotional strings back and forth. If you want, we can just go step by step through it, and each person can do it in relationship to whoever the person is in their lives they'd like to touch the, or cut the emotional strings with. It doesn't mean cutting the relationship. What it does mean is that when done successfully, it just removes the emotional reactions in the mind to behaviors that previously would trigger those actions or reactions.
Did I take notes?
Well, it's pretty simple and straightforward. I don't think you'll really need notes for it. You want to just be focused in doing it, and it'll only take 2 minutes. And so what I'm going to ask anybody who wants to do this now is just to allow yourself to get into a quiet space, close your eyes, and allow yourself to just take a couple of deep breaths and get centered.
Okay.
And then we want you to become let your awareness settle in what we're going to refer to as the seat of the unconscious. And so I'm going to just guide you there and invite you to just feed back to me when you're there. And then I'm going to invite you to get an image of the person. Of course, this would be for anybody who's doing the exercise, an image of the person that you're going to do this release with. And just let me know when you've got that image, and then we'll step into it. So imagine that I have two pencils of light, and one of them I'm going to insert right through what people call the third eye, the center of your forehead. So imagine that's being inserted right through there into your brain. And then I have a second pencil of light that we're going to drop down through right through the top of the crown of the head. And if you imagine that two pencils of light were being inserted, the place where those two pencils would meet, those two light beams would meet, would be the seat of the unconscious.
Mm.
And if you have difficulty centering there, you might just, you know, take your finger and put it on your shoulder and take your awareness to your shoulder. Take your finger and put it on your kneecap and take your awareness to your kneecap. So you can shift awareness around in your body and just center in that place where those two pencil tips of light would meet. And when you're there, let me know.
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. And now, staying focused there, I'm going to ask you to get an image of Jacob. And when you're focused there and you have an image of Jacob, let me know.
I do.
And then enlisting the help of Rukka, Rukka, I release all attachments to Jacob. Just go ahead and say that out loud.
Rukka, I release all attachment to Jacob.
And breathe. And just notice what's happening. Do you notice anything happening in your body?
Heart hurts. Heart hurts. Heart hurts. Mm. I'm not releasing it much.
Breathe into your heart.
Okay.
Time to let go of that hurt. And you want to replace that hurt with the active presence of love. Hurt held in regard to Jacob is going to tend to resonate energetically hurt. And if you allow yourself to breathe and replace that hurt with active present love, imagine perhaps doing a love exchange with Jacob, just tapping into the deepest, clearest love that you can. And imagine he's sitting in front of him, and you look right into his eyes and you extend that love toward him.
I did that a lot when he was here, and he looked at me with such hatred. And he admitted that he just sometimes just hates people. He didn't say he hated me, but he said, I just sometimes just hate people. So I'm looking at that look, but maybe I need to change that somehow.
Yeah. And if the conversation, you know, comes up and he tells you how he doesn't have any problems, that might be one of the ones that might be another addiction he needs to look at, his addiction to hating people. Because if I can focus on my hate for someone else, I don't have to look at the pain that's inside of me.
That
so let's together do that. Yeah, let's together do that love exchange with him.
Okay.
I've looked at his Facebook page, so I have an image of him, his structure, and I'll just join you in that. When else that's on the show, if you would, invite you to hold the space for both Jacob and Susan. What would it be like if all capacity for sadness, for fear, for hurt and pain in you were to drop away? And the only thing there was to move in you in Jacob's presence was the love that you are.
Yeah, I got scared. I shouldn't have.
Well, there's no shouldn't. It's just being honest with what's there. There's fear. So can you take a breath and allow that fear to drop away? So that the only energy in you that resonates when you think about Jacob, and you allow your whole structure to soften, your jaw, your face, your skull, throat, just letting anything other than love just fall away out of your physiology.
Okay.
So that means literally everything is, you know, all tensions drop and disappear.
Yeah. I can feel them going.
Shoulders, back.
Mm-hmm.
Thighs, buttocks, feet. And that you're in a space of safety with him where you're safe to be vulnerable and to just loose of all protection and be the instrument and the vehicle that delivers love to his presence. And energetically invites him to get soft, to let go of the tensions in his body that hold that hatred, that hold that pain. Rukai, release all attachments to Jacob.
Rukai, release all attachments to Jacob.
And breathe. Gently, gently breathe. And just layer by layer, you know, maybe you feel your lungs open. Energy around your heart softens. Gut relaxes. Your throat opens. Any tension in your eyes? Feet, your legs. And winding down, the show's going to cut us off in a minute or so, but let's just go through till it completes and then just allow yourself to stay in this space and continue to move this into this softer, softer, softer place where every defense and every fear lets go physiologically.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
and know that you are cherished and honored, and I love what you're doing with supporting this young man. It's awesome. Breathing with you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Michael.